and it ain't in the cards in the near future. And nonetheless, I've been going to these Citizens Police Review Board meetings. And at the last meeting, I asked Attorney Kate Wells to go and talk to the board about the issue of resisting a false arrest. And what this means is, suppose an officer comes up to you and arrests you for a fabricated crime, or makes an arrest that just is a bad arrest, he just wants to fuck with you. Do you have the right to resist? How far can you resist? I'm going to give you the short answer first, as I understand it, because maybe someone just wants to know that short answer, and then you can hear the discussion between Attorney Kate Wells and some of the board members. The short answer is kind of a complicated one. Well, not that complicated. First of all, it's technically illegal to resist even a false arrest. You have a duty to submit to an arrest, false or not false. However, there's no penalty for not fulfilling that duty. And that means that you can't be charged with a crime of resisting arrest just because you resisted at that point. You can be charged with resisting an arrest if an officer is in performance of his duties, that is, if it's not a false arrest. If it's not a false arrest, then you can be charged with resisting arrest if you resist, obstruct, or delay the officer as he arrests you. But he has to show he's in performance of his duties. He has to show that he is making what is not a false arrest. Now, what is the difference between a false arrest and a good arrest? A false arrest is an arrest where there is not probable cause for the officer to believe you're committing a crime, or I should say a reasonable person in the officer's shoes, because it is an objective test. It doesn't mean the officer has to have a really honest, sincere belief. That doesn't make any difference. It's whether a reasonable person could reasonably believe that there was probable cause to believe that you were committing a crime. And the second thing is, there cannot be excessive force associated with the officer's arrest, because even if there is probable cause, once excessive force enters, it makes the arrest a bad arrest and a false arrest. So, if the officer has probable cause, if he's not using excessive force, if he arrests you, then if you resist the arrest, that is a basis for another charge called resisting arrest. You may have noticed in Santa Cruz that a charge of resisting arrest is used a lot. For example, Jim Costner of the Santa Cruz Five is going to court and to trial on that case, possibly simply to a probation hearing where they're going to try to violate his probation for that charge. He's a man who was essentially a peaceful, if vocal, protester in the May 22nd events, and he was charged with resisting arrest, but nothing else. What was he being arrested for? That isn't clear, except for resisting arrest. And you can often see this kind of strange conundrum where the police simply charge you with the single charge of resisting arrest. How can you be resisting arrest unless there's an underlying true arrest? Well, I had suggested to the CPRB, the Citizens Police Review Board, that they ask the police department to let them hear the stats about how many resisting arrest charges have there been in the last year, so we can get an idea of how frequently the police are using this charge and whether it's being legitimately used. Unfortunately, the board didn't take this one up. But the discussion is a very interesting one. Again, the bottom line is, you have the right to resist a false arrest. However, police have a special kind of protection. And though if it's a false arrest, the police officer can't be charged with resisting a police officer, you can still be charged with things like battery and assault, simple battery and assault. So you have to be very careful. If you resist an arrest, let's say by going limp and so forth, and it's a false arrest, then there aren't battery and assault charges, and it seems like you're completely likely to be, they can't effectively charge you with that charge, resisting arrest. It sounds like we're in the middle of a legal seminar here, and I apologize, but see if you find this of interest. Let's play a bit of the conversation between Kate Wells and the Citizens Police Review Board. This actually took place before the board formally opened, because they weren't unable to get a quorum for 45 minutes on Monday evening when they had their regular monthly meeting. So this happened sort of almost as an informal aside before the board actually met. The attorney, Kate Wells, couldn't stay for the whole meeting, so she spoke at this time to a reduced board. There were only three board members there. Arnie Leff, Becky Blythe, and the comatose Bruce Morse. Here's the tape, and see what you think.
With that, what I'm going to do is open your all communications. There are two... I know that Kate Wells is here to discuss an issue that came up at the last meeting, which is resisting a false arrest, and we
So for those of you who don't, I am Kate Wells, a local civil rights attorney, and I've been fighting the good fight for about 25 years here in Santa Cruz. Just have a couple of preliminary statements, and I want to congratulate all of you for devoting your precious time to this important task. Unfortunately, we're in an age right now where our rights, our civil rights, are eroding at a pretty rapid rate. And I can no longer, for instance, have a glass of wine and watch the sunset on my favorite beach in a perfectly peaceful manner. Things like that, these things are just wafting away. And at the same time that's happening, the immunities for police officers are expanding at an incredibly rapid rate. There's been a recent Supreme Court decision that says that now that deputy sheriffs are for purposes of Title 42 actions, civil rights actions, are state officers and not county officers anymore. This is even though the sheriff is locally elected and locally paid and locally. The import of that is under the 11th Amendment, a state officer is immune, flat out immune for even his intentional malicious acts. The reasoning in that case was that they are state officers because they enforce state law. Well, city police officers enforce state law too, so you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're next in line. A police officer is immune from civil damages for even their intentional and malicious lies that they would tell on the stand to get a regular citizen arrested or convicted of a crime. They are absolutely immune from civil damages. So the deck is already stacked. And so what you're doing is so important and I would urge you to follow your moral imperative. I know that you are handcuffed and shackled figuratively in many ways by both the police department and by those persons who have appointed you and by the rules that have been set. No one is ever truly punished for doing the right thing for the right reason. And that's all I ask, is that when you're doing this task that you have, that if it walks like excessive force and it talks like excessive force, it is excessive force, regardless of what the technical rules might tell you, and regardless of whether there's some other reason that they're telling you that it's not. Okay, on to resisting unlawful arrest. The law is not simple in this area. And in fact, it was kind of interesting because I learned something in my research that I didn't know. And so let me tell you what I found out. Almost all American jurisdictions, including California, have recognized a traditional privilege to resist an unlawful arrest. And that tradition basically allowed you to resist with reasonable force. That right still exists, but with a little change in complexion. In 1957, the legislature passed Penal Code Section 834A, which basically says, it's like the opposite side of the coin, it says you have a duty to refrain from forcibly resisting an arrest. Now this has been held to apply to both lawful and unlawful arrest. Okay. Forcible is an important word there. You have the right still to go limp, to not cooperate with an unlawful arrest. The interesting part about this code section is that there's no punishment for it. So absent any specific punishment, what happens is the law becomes what the regular law is for regular people, not just police officers. So in other words, if you in fact forcibly resist an unlawful arrest, you are guilty of simple battery, something that would be true if you were pushing your neighbor or anyone else. There's no special distinction given to the police officer. So if you shove the officer in the course of an unlawful arrest, you could be guilty of battery. Okay. Now, the other really important area has to do with excessive force. If, in fact, excessive force is being used, and this applies to both lawful and unlawful arrests, both lawful and unlawful arrests, if there is excessive force being used, you have the right to resist. And you have the right to resist with force. The case law, it talks about this.
Let me clarify that statement.
Okay.
What I heard you say is if there's unreasonable force.
Excessive force.
Excessive force.
Right. You have the right to resist even if it's a lawful arrest.
If there's excessive force, then the right to resist exists.
Right. Let me read out of a case called People versus Henderson. Which I don't know if you want citations, but this is a 1976 case. It says, but these principles are qualified by the rule allowing resistance to excessive force, which applies during a technical lawful or unlawful arrest, and which protects a person's right to bodily integrity and permits the right to resort to self-defense. Okay? So you can see that there's a lot of layers to this. Okay? In other words, the code section itself, again, I'll go over it one more time, says that you cannot forcibly resist an unlawful arrest. It says nothing about just, like I said, going limp, or just not cooperating. That is not even mentioned in there. So that's the first level. Second level being that, what was the second level? the third level being that if there's excessive force, I know what it was. If you do, in fact, then resist a lawful arrest, an unlawful arrest with force. It's not what they commonly call battery on a police officer, which is an enhanced crime. It's simple battery. It's not, there's no enhancement for that. And there's actually nothing in the code section 834A itself which would call for a punishment in and of itself. I have copied 148, which is resisting arrest, and some of the cases after that. I have also copied the 834A, which is the Penal Code section on resistance to arrest, which reads, if a person has knowledge or by exercise of reasonable care should have knowledge that he is being arrested by a peace officer, it is the duty of such person to refrain from using force or any weapon to resist such arrest. Okay, that's important. And then a couple of cases that I copied that actually talk about what the privilege is about.
Great.
So I will.
You get to Gary, you don't get into it.
Okay, fantastic. Are there any questions?
No, Mr. Morris.
No.
When you first started out, you said that police officers, you first started
are immune. You're talking about the immunities? Okay. Let me go back and talk about how immunities began. Immunities started basically as a military concept. They didn't want generals to be sued by their soldiers for leading them into battle and getting killed. Probably a pretty valid reason for immunity. When judges got a hold of this, they thought, gee, we like that concept, so we're going to expand this to include us in that. So judges are absolutely immune for even their intentional and malicious acts. Even their intentional and malicious acts. They're civilly immune. Now, it's been extended to prosecutors. It's been extended, they just keep expanding it because, guess what? Who is making the rulings on immunity? It's judges who share that immunity, who of course don't want to see that concept eroded in any manner. In fact,
but that's civil immunity.
Civil immunity, right, right.
Civil, not criminal.
Yes, but you know what? I'd like you to ask when the last time was that the district attorney prosecuted a police officer in Santa Cruz County for perjury. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. So your only recourse is in civil courts. So that's what's happened, and it just continues to expand. Every police officer knows when they climb up on that stand that they can tell a lie with impunity. And that's, with all due respect to Sergeant Sepulveda, who I think is a, stand-up guy and would never do something like that, there are some who do. And basically, even if you can prove that their lies are intentional and malicious, you can't do anything about it. Nothing.
Not civilly, but theoretically, criminally.
Theoretically, there is a criminal perjury charge that could be brought against them by the people of the state of California, the district attorney's office. The district attorney's office who works hand-in-hand with them every day. and unlikely to happen. Unlikely to happen. So it's tough for us civil rights attorneys. You know, like I said, the rights are eroding at a pretty rapid rate, and the immunities are expanding. And it makes your job all the more important as that liaison there that can ferret out those officers who really are a problem. You know, 90% of them are great officers, but the problem is that if you have a bad officer, it's not as if you have a bad accountant, who might lose you some money. You have a bad officer, he carries a gun and has license to kill. And that's scary. It's a much more important issue.
And that was Kate Wells. Before the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday, talking about resisting an unlawful arrest. And with me is that master of arrests, unlawful and otherwise, Richard Quigley. Hi, Richard.
I've never been lawfully arrested. You know, that's kind of interesting now that I think about it.
You've never been lawfully arrested?
No.
How many times have you been arrested?
In my entire life, four.
Four times?
Yeah.
And how many times in Santa Cruz County?
All four.
And when was your last fall from grace?
April 26th, the day that we got Jerry Henry's license back.
I should say that for those who haven't been listening, but perhaps those who may remember from briefly listening, Jerry Henry is a man who has been in Aptos, a shopping center, kind of advising young people, sort of a street minister, also a man who is somewhat disabled himself psychologically in terms of having... They kicked him once too many times in the corporate world, and he's particularly sensitive to abuse by police officers and others in positions of authority. Kind of sends him into a state where he can't eat and he can't sleep. But it's certainly so he has a psychological disability. But his determination to advise young people about their rights and so forth is sort of undaunted and undiminished. And he was recently arrested not once, but twice on a $100,000 bail because his advocacy alarmed and disturbed some merchants in the Aptos Shopping Center, notably merchants in Gottschalk's, Rancho Liquors, and I guess the Coffee Roasting Company. Is that an accurate sort of a summary there, Richard?
Sure. It's as accurate as it can get. I mean, nobody's really clear what the sins are. The nature of social cleansing is that when you start on a social cleansing program, you got to make all kinds of excuses. But I don't know. The range in why he is being harassed and has been banished from that area range all the way from the coffee roasting company, the previous manager of the roasting company, couldn't sleep at night and had heart palpitations, and it never occurred to him it could be the coffee. So they decided to mess with Jerry. It's ranged from there all the way to Mark Tracy's wife don't like the looks of Jerry's Henry, and since they shop in that shopping center, they've decided they got to run him out of her sight. So your guess is as good as mine. I know one thing, that he hasn't broken any lawful statutes.
In fact, he's never been taken to trial, although he's been jailed how many times now?
Oh, God, the number of times he's been jailed, I don't know. The number of charges have been brought against him, not counting the 11 that are pending now. The first round, they had 9 on him, and the last time round, I think it was 2. That was the time they were going to prosecute him for calling himself a nigger. But they go right to the day of trial, and then they just drop everything. It's just like they inflict the maximum amount of punishment that they can inflict on a disabled guy in every way that they can. It's just like this last deal where they revoked his OR and put him on $100,000 bail, which is like 200 times what the law calls for is the maximum bail, and that's on a cite and release offense, this 602.1 trespassing stuff, you know, in a public place. I don't know how you trespass in a public place, but that's why they don't put him on trial. He hasn't done anything.
So what happened, as I recall, last weekend was I learned from you on Friday night a week ago that he had been rearrested on, again, a $100,000 bail for a crime that maximum penalty is $1,000 or maybe $2,000 at the most. And this is a nonviolent crime. It doesn't involve any destruction of property.
Well, no, there wasn't even an allegation of a crime on this last Friday. They revoked his OR. The condition of the OR was that he stayed out of Rancho Del Mar.
And they claimed that he admitted, in fact, that he had been sitting on a wall that was behind a fence that then the Rancho Del Mar said that was a part of the Rancho Del Mar. I'm not familiar with the Rancho Del Mar area. Can you describe for me what this
There's a retaining wall that goes down alongside the street there that there's no doubt in my mind that the county built to keep the land that the shopping center is sitting on up there while they built the road down below. So there's this big long retaining wall, which I'm sure is part of the sidewalk, is part of the street, is part of public property. And then there's a wooden fence that distinguishes the line between the outside world and Rancho Del Mar. And he was clearly on the other side of the fence. And then he was at a public bus stop, which also is not inside the shopping center. And then the other allegation that they used to say that he had violated the conditions of this OR, which was stay out of Rancho, was that some guy from the liquor store was walking across the street and Jerry said something to him, but he told the cop that he didn't care. You know, he knows Jerry. It was conversation, but the guy that owned the liquor store tried to make a big deal out of it. Next thing you know, Heather Morris is having him arrested for $100,000. They didn't even bother to charge him with anything over this. They just threw him in jail for 5 days. They impounded his car. He wasn't even driving at the time. They impounded his car and threw his dog in the pound. So he'd been fined 5 days in jail, $330 out of pocket, and he didn't do anything.
Well, he did offend perhaps Mark Tracy's wife by...
Well, that's one of the possibilities. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, if an individual isn't properly dressed in the Rancho Del Mar, don't you think that constitutes something of a public offense?
Oh, in their eyes, most certainly.
Well, I'm glad you see it that way.
Clearly. You know, it was interesting, man. You know who Kovacevic is?
Now let's tell the audience about this. Kovacevic was a judge for a brief period of time in 1996.
Appointed by Wilson.
He was appointed by Governor Wilson, Whiplash Wilson, as I call him.
Yeah.
And he served very briefly, and he showed up in court again, I guess on Monday or Tuesday. I guess it was Tuesday, and as the prosecutor prosecuting Jerry Henry.
Yeah. And now you do understand who he is.
Tell me.
Well, his former judge that was hired back at the DA's office, and then when Danner was elevated to whatever the hell they call him, it's inconceivable to me that anybody would consider him a judge, but Anyway, and this guy, Ruiz, came in. He took this jerk, Kovacevic, because Kovacevic, after he got beat in the election, couldn't hold the bench through an election. That's when they elected that woman. I forget what her name is, but...
Heather Morris, Charlotte
Clinton. No.
Cow.
He's up, anyway. So this guy goes on some sort of a sabbatical over Tibet, you know, sit around a temple and contemplate his navel, and then he comes back to town. I mean, I kind of looked at the guy and I figured, you know, if he fell down a well, he'd pump nerd forever, but no big deal, you know. He wasn't one of those people that particularly impressed or unimpressed me whatsoever until Tuesday. Now, Tuesday, they got this guy in there on $100,000 bail that hasn't done anything. And we start listening to this Mr. Kovacevic, who has now been appointed by Ruiz to be the number two guy in the office. He's not a DDA, Deputy District Attorney, which is what sits in the misdemeanor courtrooms. They throw in DDAs. He's an ADA, an Assistant District Attorney, number two guy in the office. And this jerk stands there and explains to Commissioner Salazar that this case is not political.
Certainly not.
This case is not political. And he can't explain to you why the hell that he's down there doing something short of a mass murder, but it's not political. He's just coming down there to try to whoop these 11 misdemeanors on this disabled guy, but it's not political. So right away, you know, I start getting a little edgy because I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, this son of a bitch is a liar. It's not like he's the only one I ever seen down there, but you'd think that somebody that had sat on the bench would have a little bit more respect for the bench than to stand there and lie.
Well, maybe he knows he's not going to be called on his fabrication.
And then you remember, I left.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure you know why.
Why did you leave there, Richard?
I walked out of that courtroom and I went outside because that asshole called Jerry Henry a fool. And this is part of the demonization of Jerry Henry. They're sitting there trying to say all the terrible things that Jerry has done, and everything that came out of their mouth was either not true or sophomoric, infantile name-calling.
Well, I know that they claim that he was spouting obscenities.
No, that's me. They're all confused about that. Jerry does not, he does not yell profanities and obscenities. I do.
Right.
Well, that's me.
Well, sometimes I think your obscenities are closer to the truth than most people's inanities.
Well, I stand by every motherfucker. Oh, excuse me, every word I ever said.
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm. When people walk up to me and say "move on," there is very little in my vocabulary that I can find to return fire that is on a par with "move on."
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Which is what they've been telling Jerry Henry, of course.
Yeah, those are obscene words to me. They are more obscene than what the list of the seven dirty words George Carlin says all piled together in any configuration. Move along, boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, I ain't nobody's nigger, and I ain't, no, I, anyway, so now we got this character assassination of a disabled guy that had reached the point with this ADA, that now he's name-calling.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get out of the courtroom to keep him going to jail because I was about to stand up and level that courtroom. I mean, I was going to, you talk about some profanities, buddy, I was ready. I was so pissed, I had to get out of there.
I'm glad you did, because we wouldn't have had you on the radio.
Oh, no, because I would have gone off, man. And all the time I've been down there at that courthouse, I'll see these jerks in the hallways, and I'll walk by them. I never say a word. Mark Tracy, I think, is the most low-life piece of crap on the planet, and I'll walk by him, never say a word. I see this district attorney walking around the halls all the time, never say a word. The county council, the guy that runs this whole show, never say a damn word. But I'm going to tell you something, man. Kovacevic came out of that courtroom, and I will continue to. I will remind him at every opportunity what an unmitigated, absolute jerk I believe him to be.
Well, let's return to the case of Jerry Henry. Jerry was, again, offered they kind of have expanded the forbidden zone.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
now he's got a choice of one or two things. First, they offered him $10,000 bail or an OR, the conditions of which now he has to stay 100 yards away from the shopping center. 100 yards.
That's a football field, right?
Well, as I understand it, because I wasn't there, I'd already left. But Kovacevic sat there and made the point with Mr. Henry directly, chiding and ridiculing him. You know, you do know what a football field is, you know, that kind of crap. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand Kate got so much, she couldn't stand it. She finally got up and was told by the judge to sit down and shut up.
She was upset when Kovacevic started. Actually, I responded first when Kovacevic said, "You are shouting obscenities," and I said, "What obscenities?" Because the point being that there was no indication in any of the police reports from any of the witnesses that Jerry had said anything obscene at all.
No.
Although, of course, this whole prosecution is in the nature of an obscenity.
Well, no, exactly. And like I said, they have nothing to say about him that is not untrue, straight out a lie, or based on some character assessment of some lowlife like Kovacevic.
So, but eventually the outcome of it was Jerry Henry accepted this 100-yard prohibition?
Well, either that or sit in jail with $100,000 bail on his head.
Mm-hmm.
They started off, it was going to be an either $10,000 or bail. And I wish that his attorney had held up to find out, you know, how much would the bail be with no restrictions on the man's freedom? Because
mm-hmm.
I really would like to know what the hell kind of number they'd have come up with.
So that's the price of freedom, huh?
I'd like to know what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a rare day in court when you learn how high the price of freedom is in Santa Cruz County. And it would have been more than $100,000, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, ain't no doubt in my mind.
Well, Richard, what's the next court hearing on this? Do we know?
I don't know when the next court hearing is. I know that there's something coming up next week, but I don't know what it is. I do know that Jerry's holding up okay, all things considered, man. I think he's holding up real damn good. In fact, I'm probably further out there than he is.
Take deep breaths.
I wrote a letter to the district attorney,
mm-hmm.
and it's rather strong, and it ain't half of what I'm doing. I'm getting hold of the bar. I am going to file complaints against this guy, Kovacevic. I mean, the name-calling there's nothing relevant about it.
I hear you.
I do not understand the point of it. I mean, why would a professional, an assistant district attorney, stand in a courtroom and name call like some kind of a high school, you know, grade school punk? I don't get that one.
Right.
I don't get that one.
So we don't know when his next hearing is,
no.
But he's being charged with 11 misdemeanors.
11 misdemeanors.
Essentially, the misdemeanors have nothing to do with any kind of violence against people or property. They are things like public nuisance.
Trespassing in a public place, which is, you know, that won't fly.
Mm-hmm.
Disturbing the peace, and that has to do with the fact that he's protesting the fact that he's being harassed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all First Amendment protected self-defense. And then they charged him with, just to make sure they got the number of misdemeanors high enough, they brought in a nuisance, public nuisance. But of course, the public nuisance statute is very clear. You only break out the public nuisance statute when you have no other statute that you can charge somebody with. So when you start piling on with stuff like that, man, it gets pretty transparent after a while.
We've been talking to Richard Quigley. Richard, is there anything you want to sum up with on this issue about Jerry Henry, who is currently at liberty? And I guess there are some folks who are planning a protest, a boycott of the businesses and the sheriff's subsection that's behind this harassment of Henry.
Well, I'm certainly doing everything. The day is coming very soon that there is going to be a move to shut to see if we can get a boycott of the entire shopping center. If those retailers, if those businesses in there will allow the shopping center to do things like this to the people in this community, we need to encourage the people in this community to shop somewhere else.
Boycott bigotry?
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Richard. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, Kovacevic is a jerk. Did I mention that Kovacevic is a jerk?
Yes, you did. You said that. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And, of course, we welcome any calls from former judge and assistant district attorney Kovacevic to counter any of the claims made here. Our phone number is 427-3772, 427-3772. Very interesting conversations we're having. Lines are open. I'm about to play to jump to another subject. I never have time on this show, it feels like. I'm probably trying to cram too much in, I'm sure, but that's just what I do. Here's an incoming call. Let's see who we got here.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Well, Robert, how you doing?
This is that man about petitions, Bob LaMonica.
Yeah, hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm good.
I thought it might be appropriate and timely to weigh in on the present trend towards Danner revisionism.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is very topical in our county at this point in time. Mr. Danner has, of course, been appointed a judge, and apparently is going to be he's going to run in March without any opposition.
I might run against him.
Well, I think that this cuts to the core of what's important and what ought to be important, and abuse of power and recognition and response thereof. And I really challenge anyone in the community to look at the well-documented allegations against Art Danner when he was a DA and the cesspool of corruption that was spawned by him, and not be sickened by Mr. Danner's placement as a judge. And this issue will never go away.
Let me comment on that, Bob.
Please.
You know, when Danner became a judge, I of course shuddered, but I wanted to look at his court practice somewhat objectively to see what I thought, you know, his record was. And he apparently was treating some defendants, homeless defendants particularly, with some solicitude in a certain way. For example, he didn't throw Chris Brozda out of court. When I suggested to, when I wanted a tape record in his court, he had no objections. Many judges do. When I suggested, this is the first time this ever happened in any court, that I couldn't hear what the defendants and what the judge was saying, instead of shouting, "Speak up, please, Your Honor, the public can't hear you," which is completely appropriate, but also may involve, you know, you having a heart attack or getting arrested or something for saying it. When I presented this information to the bailiff and said, "Take it up there," the bailiff did. He spoke up, and the bailiff told me, you know, he will speak louder, and he also will give you the permission to record. So, there are some small things I liked about Danner. Of course, unfortunately, recently I've seen, if you were listening to the show earlier, you heard in Danner's court, Danner did this double talk decision around Dennis Rehm, who's a man who lives in his vehicle, has shown clearly that legally he cannot continue to have warrants keep going out for him on a failure to pay on a camping ticket. It just can't be. It's not legally possible, and Danner is ignoring that. But again, my question is, isn't Danner part of this whole sort of cesspool at the DA's office, and sort of like part and parcel of the whole thing? Not the evil genius behind it, not the big bad boy behind it, but just another turd floating in the bowl. So
well, I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. Nonetheless, this gentleman was a district attorney for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and also was elected to a sixth term unopposed. But as I said before, these allegations, and they're extremely well documented, will never go away. And most Free Radio listeners are very aware of the falsification, time cards, election, hush money payoff allegation.
Why don't you, in about,
now, this is not going to go away.
In five sentences, you can clarify those three particular incidents which Danner is most notorious for. And by the way, when I use the phrase a turd floating in the toilet bowl, I'm not attempting to be personal with Art Danner. I got to be real clear about this.
These guys they're immune, Robert. And
I think individuals, their behavior speaks for them. And I think when people are put away for huge amounts of time in the drug war, the kind of abuse that happens against our community is something that can never be rectified, and it results in the destruction of lives and family. And I feel one has to, in essence, characterize people who are doing this and who are in positions of power. So I don't want it just to be seen like an adolescent who's sort of, you know, going knee.
No. I think that it is striking in the position Art Danner, DA. But things like this do not happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Danner and others are well aware of immunity. They use it and they practice it. They're also well aware that most people are intimidated by authority and power. They use that and they practice it.
Well, isn't Ruiz just as bad as Danner? I mean, has he an improvement?
Well, to the degree that I could, I lobbied for Ruiz.
I did.
Through my supervisor.
I hoped for him, too. But what do you see now that you've looked at his record for the last 6 or 8 months?
I think he deserves an elected shot at it. That's what I see. They had to get somebody from the outside. It had to be somebody that was going to be acceptable to the legal community, and Ron Ruiz was the most.
Yeah, there's no change in the drug
candidate.
War. There's no change in the overcharging. I mean, it seems to me the same shit goes on. Ruiz speaks for this shoulder tap law, goes to foreign. forums and says, let's criminalize the youth. I mean, this is no change. This is bad.
I won't dispute any of that. And until people really want things to change on that level, and I think to a large degree, until these things affect one personally, we don't take them all that seriously. All right. But to come back to Mr. Danner and the situation, which I think is, if truly we live in a democratic republic, then we have to respond to abuse of power. And when it can be shown clearly that such a high position of power and authority as the district attorney's office has been abused, and I cite several examples, and we had a list of about 20 examples. It was quite shocking.
You ran campaigns to have our Danner recalled.
Absolutely. And what it did, in a minimum, was it helped to keep the issue alive. But one of the, I think, easier examples to remember is Mr. Danner was involved in a car wreck in 1987, and car wrecks happen. He was the at-fault driver, and those things happen. Now, he was the at-fault drinking driver, and those things happen also. But who gets the blood test? It wasn't the at-fault drinking driver, who happened to be the DA at the time, Art Danner. It was the victim.
Mm-hmm.
It was the victim.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now how are we going to slough this under the carpet, and it's old news and it's stale and we can't comment?
I think it's as relevant now as it ever was.
It is absolutely irrelevant.
In fact, it was brought up last night by my associate co-conspirator often at the city council. Both of us often speak. He often goads me to speak. Scott Graham. Scott's pointed out to me that he thought, in a way, that city attorney, maybe it wasn't Barisoni at the time, maybe it was an earlier city attorney, could have been Barisoni, had an obligation to press for an independent prosecution of Danner in 87, when this accident happened? Or
87 was also the same year that the Corinne Christensen murder. Well, Corinne Christensen was murdered in November 86. 87 was the trial of Richard Bandler, which was an absolute total farce. I have been into the file of the trial. The claim is that the preliminary hearing minutes were lo and behold discovered 3 years later. They were lost, and then they're discovered 3 years later. This thing is just riddled with being rifled and being railroaded through. Somebody murdered Corinne Christensen. Richard Bandler had blowback on him. He's found not guilty. The accessory, the accessory, a guy named Marino, who shows the police where the murder weapon is off the Capitola Pier, he is immune. He's given immunity for drug charges, which is amazing. But they never charge him with anything.
Let me interrupt you because I'm running the last 14 minutes of my show. Can I get you to sum up briefly?
Yeah, recognition and response to abuse of power is the ultimate important realization in an honest and forward government. And in the case of the community of Santa Cruz, we need to look seriously at Arthur Danner III, and Danner revisionism is totally out of context.
Not to mention the DA's office, and hopefully we'll get some rent control too. Talk to you later, Bob.
Robert, thank you.
All right.
So, rushing forward here, particularly impressed the other day with an interview I had with a woman who recycles cans. She has a small car, truck. She kind of rolls around and does that. I played one of her interviews both here and for the Homeless Issues Task Force. Here's a follow-up interview, which I think is even more revealing. Okay, it's October 10th, 1999. I'm standing here. We're actually talking through a fence here, I'm talking to
Verna Hernandez.
And Verna, you're doing some recycling. You're actually smashing some cans here in the parking lot, getting them ready for recycling. And we spoke earlier, and you spoke, of course, to the Homeless Issues Task Force about the issue of city employee harassment, I guess sometimes police harassment,
yes,
for engaging in what seems to be a useful activity both for you and for your daughter, who I suppose you're getting some money for medicine for doing this with.
Yes, indeed. She just got her cast off her legs. I'm happy. Seemed to do its job. But it was 2 weeks ago, on Tuesday. I remember because I went to a meeting. I went out in Soquel from 4 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock. I had to be in a meeting. I came out of the meeting at 8:30. And I went to two places I went to recycle, pick up recyclables. And guess what happened? Here comes the police with a supervisor from the city recycling. And he said he had been following me all morning.
Well, you're a popular figure here, Verna.
So I'm glad I want you to know the city is paying their supervisors to follow people around all morning. So here comes another police car. Here comes another city recycle supervisor.
How many cars and cops do we have here?
Right now we have four cars and two policemen and two supervisors from the city recycling. And then guess what happens? A garbage truck comes.
Really?
With, of course, the driver and the shotgun person to take all my cans and bottles out of my car. And I'm going to tell you, I cried. I told them, please don't take my cans and bottles. I need medicine for my daughter today. And they took them. I begged them. I'll never beg them again. They're dogs.
Who was the person seemed to be in charge?
The city recycle man.
You know his name?
No, I don't. I think his name's Jose or something like that. I don't know his name.
You know what he looks like?
He's a little short man with curly hair. And the other man's kind of tall. I don't know what his name is, Paul or something like that. He's very rude. They have a real personal dislike for me. Do you know that yesterday I was at the bank and a garbage truck went by and stopped and stared at me? And you know what? The other day I was down at some friend's house and a garbage truck followed me. A garbage truck followed me. Do you think a garbage truck can follow me without getting permission from their supervisor when they're on their route? I don't think so.
Maybe what we should do is start trapping these garbage trucks. We could sort of use you as a decoy and get these trucks to follow you around, then sort of block them in. We could do a garbage, kind of a garbage robbery. You know, seize all their old banana peels. It would be so ludicrous, except that how much money did you lose as a consequence of this seizure of your cans and other recyclables?
I think I probably had about $30 or $40 worth of recyclables. Maybe $30, not $40, that's stretching. I had about $30 worth of recyclables. The ticket I got was $81.
And this is your second or third ticket?
This is my third ticket. Mm-hmm. My third ticket.
What did they tell you?
Oh, they told me to get a job.
Did you ask them what their salary was? The combined salaries of all these people must have certainly been at least several times the amount of both the $30 seized and the $81 fine, assuming you paid it in cash.
Yes. Oh, actually, I went to court and the judge dismissed one of them.
Which judge was this?
McFuller.
Mulligan?
Mulligan, right. He
in the basement?
Yes, he dismissed one of them. The other one, he gave me till January the 10th to pay the $81. And he dismissed, like I said, one in the furtherance of justice.
Uh-huh. Right.
Which is just. That is just, I believe.
I don't think so. I think no tickets is what's
yeah,
best.
Yeah, I think no tickets is what's best, too. But then let me tell you, on Sunday morning, I was down at a restaurant on Beach Street where they have prime rib for $9.99 or whatever. I was getting the bottles off of their deck. And a lady stopped. She said, may I ask you some questions? Where did you get those bottles? I work for the city... What's the name of that? She works for the city.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I got them off of the deck. Mm-hmm. Oh, out of the garbage? We're going to run a list of all the restaurants in the city that do not cooperate in the recycling program.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to run a list in the newspaper. I said, what about people like the Catalyst who give me their bottles? Let me tell you, the people at the Catalyst give me their bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see the police try to take those away from me.
And what was the response of this eager, avid city employee?
Oh, she told me that... I have her permission to go in the dumpsters. I said, oh, good, I'll tell them Jane send me. And she said, no, don't tell them I send you.
That's great, a new bumper sticker. Tell them Jane sent you.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
How many other people do this that you know of, and have they been hassled?
I don't know anybody that's been hassled as much as I have. I know a lot of people that do it. A lot of people, but a lot of them are on bikes, so they're not as conspicuous. They're either walking or on bikes. And I don't know.
You know, I invite you to come tonight to the Homeless Issues Task Force Legal Committee. It's not that big committee you're at. It's a smaller subcommittee. Except, you know, if you have other things you need to do with your time, it might be better to not to come because you have to, an expenditure of time. But we're going to be talking about legal issues. What we need to do, of course, is look at the actual laws. What you need to do is start researching the laws, and it's, it's a whole different thing, but you go to the law library. I see someone here wants to say something. Yes?
Yeah, Vera, I spoke to Mayor Catherine Byers about...
Is it Vera or Verna?
Verna. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, uh-huh. About your situation, and she listened very thoughtfully, and when I told her that you were getting money for medicine for your child, she says, oh, that can't be. If she's low income, she qualifies for Medi-Cal and SHO, and that would pay all of her child's medical expenses. I was wondering what your response to that would be.
I thank God I do have Medi-Cal and I do have SHO, and also my daughter gets CCS, which is California Children's Services, which does pay for her casts and her braces. But she has a slight case of cerebral palsy in her lower extremities, which the biggest expenditure of medicine is for, it's called lactulose. It's like a laxative, but it's not a laxative. But they won't cover laxatives. They don't cover enemas. They don't cover things. The one that cost me $89 every 3 weeks is called lactulose, and it's a, they don't cover it. Nobody will cover it because it is. And there was one called clonidine that they wanted to put her on to protect her liver that was $300 a month. Now, I could not, and nobody would cover that because you know what? It was to protect her liver. There was nothing wrong with her liver. It was to protect her liver because the medicine that she was taking to control seizures was affecting her liver. The clonidine would protect her liver, but they wouldn't cover that until she had damage done to her liver.
They'll pull your teeth, but they won't help you get engaged in preventive dentistry.
Right. So I took her off of that medicine because I wasn't going to, I couldn't pay, you know, I could come up with $300. 1 month. 2 months. How many months? How many months could I come up with $300 extra a month?
What kind of rent do you pay?
$500 a month.
This is for a palatial estate on the coast?
We have a room. My daughter and I rent a room. In a house with a very nice couple.
Is there anything you want to say to free radio people out there, or a number you'd like them to... Well, if anybody's interested in you know, advocating for people who are caught up in this new garbage truck dragnet against, I guess, recyclers, and I guess there's also a law against scavenging.
Oh, yes.
Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Anything you would like to say, Verna?
I'd like to say, I don't see why people have to eat out of dumpsters, eat food out of dumpsters, when they can pick up a couple of cans and bottles and make $5 or $10 a day to eat. I don't see why. It's like you said, pull their teeth. Why do they have to wait till they get sick to get help? Why can't they just get help? Help themselves. People want to help themselves get food. So they get it out of the dumpster instead of getting the cans and bottles. You know, that breaks my heart to see people eating out of dumpsters, when there's cans and bottles in there that they could take and sell.
Provided that Jane is on the job and helping out. Thank you, Vernon.
Thank you.
And that about wraps it up for Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides this time. My apologies to the, at the moment, anonymous complainant who I met in front of the police department the other day complaining about Officer Seeley and his failure to file a police report in a battery situation, which I regard as a form of negligence. Dare we call it criminal negligence? I don't know. I don't want to be accused of hostility to Officer Seeley, but I have been following his recent career with some misgivings, and I'm concerned about that. We're going to be playing that interview hopefully on Sunday, and for those who want to reach us off-air between now and Sunday, the phone number to call is 423-HUFF, us being... those of us concerned with civil rights for the homeless, you'll get me, you'll get other folks, you'll get information, 423-4833. And Sunday at 11 o'clock from 11 to 1:30, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides returns, and you can call and be on the air and join us or just listen from the safety of your own bush, if you have a radio, or your own room, if you're lucky enough to have a room. Lots of interesting stuff we have not had time to play. We're going to hope to follow the independent investigation of Brouhaha Dolphin Lee, what's happening with that project. Just went to San Francisco today, interviewed some Coalition on Homelessness people about the Ammiano versus Brown struggle. Looks like actually a genuine grassroots movement may pull a real upset there in December with significant consequences. I am... almost out of time. I got about a minute left, and we're going to be running into Uncle Dennis's show, who selfishly insists on getting all his time. Can you believe it? The New Street Spirit and the New Street Sheet are available for November. Give a call to 423-HUFF if you want to sell, distribute, or simply read the New Street Sheet or Street Spirit.
And there is a HUF meeting tomorrow. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meets at 9 o'clock in the morning. Get up early, all you folks. And toddle on down to the coffee roasting company, not in Aptos, that's a verboten, but in Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue. We're going to be working on the Boycott Bigotry campaign, the campaign to have the merchants just say no to anti-homeless laws, or we will just say no to merchant profits during the holidays. So do that. 9 o'clock tomorrow, Coffee Roasting Company. And we'll see you there. Also, check out the ongoing, hearings coming up on civil commitment law changes. Very important stuff. Thanks for being with me, and listen to Uncle Dennis. He's our man.
Present day hero. Sporting a pinstripe and wearing the regiment's tie. Blood in his eye, the world on his shoulders. Trims his mustache while he's dreaming of destiny's hour. Greedy for power, ready to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that everything he does is right. National hero, neat little man who's been chosen by fate to redeem the national dream, imperial greatness. St. George with a briefcase is looking for dragons to slay, waits for the day we ask him to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that God is absolutely white. Classical hero, standing alone on the bridge, he's defending the race, setting his face against the invader. Knowing the worth of a man can be seen by his skin, the killing begins. Determined to save the nation and lead us in the fight. Never a doubt that virtue is pure and blemished white. Yesterday's hero, trapped in a bunker and died like a rat in a hole. Ultimate goal of second-hand hero. Another one rises, demanding the right to be heard, and gets the bird. History shrugs its shoulders, gives a big horse laugh, and the cut price hero ends up with the rest of the trash.
And of course you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM.